It's 8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Park City Leadership invites the community to its free annual Community Leadership Lecture. That's happening on Monday, March 20th. This year's speaker is David Potruck. He's a part-time Park City resident, author, and former CEO of Charles Schwab. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Nice to be with you.
So if you would, begin by telling us a little bit about yourself, what you'd like our listeners to know about you.
Well, I'd like them to know that I'm an avid skier. I've been living for about 10 years in Park City, and I try to spend as much time as I can there. It's a real privilege to be a member of the Park City community. I grew up in New York. I moved to California 30 years ago to go to work for Charles Schwab. And now I spend as much time as I can in Park City.
As I mentioned, the event taking place 7 to 9 p.m. Monday evening at the Jim Sandy Auditorium. My understanding is that you and Leadership Park City founder Miles Riedemann will be having more of a Q&A discussion rather than you giving a lecture. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think we're going to I call it a fireside chat. He's going to ask me a bunch of questions. Hopefully those questions will stimulate questions from the audience. And we'll talk a little bit about leadership, what it takes to lead organizations, and what it takes to lead breakthrough, bold changes in a very changing world.
Well, I guess one of the things you will discuss is what makes a leader, and I suppose we should say what makes a good leader, because we certainly have plenty of bad examples around the world, Bashar al-Assad, Kim Jong-un, and while they call themselves leader in the best sense of the word, they're not. So in your mind, what makes a good leader?
Well, a good leader, Leslie, is someone who can inspire followership. You know, if you're the leader of any kind of an organization, unless you're a totalitarian leader where you lead with power and you lead with force, most of us who lead organizations in today's world, business organizations, not-for-profit organizations, our legitimacy comes from our talent, our ability to inspire people, our ability to have people want to follow and be a part of whatever vision we're trying to bring into reality.
So as you're likely aware, this leadership program looks to make ordinary residents our future leaders. I mean, what advice can you give them?
Well, I think we start to become a good leader by being a good follower. In the beginning, before we're leaders, we're part of an organization. We're part of some organization, whether it's a volunteer organization or a business organization or whatever kind of organization it is. And if we're not yet the leader, that doesn't mean we can't help the leader take the organization forward. We can be a good follower. We can understand that our real leadership doesn't come from authority. It comes from talent. It comes from people. And we all know people in our lives who are like this, who people gravitate to what they have to say, and they say it in a way that is inclusive. It's inspiring. And you want to be a part of whatever they're doing. And that's a learned talent. We're not born with that. We have to learn how to do that.
All right. And as you mentioned, you'll also be talking a little bit about the challenges of innovation and change in today's fast-paced and confusing world. So the lesson here is that the best leaders welcome change?
Well, I think the best leaders welcome change. That would that would certainly be my point of view, because I think change creates opportunity. People hate change. By the way, people hate change.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. People hate change. People like, they may say that, they may whine and they may mutter about how they wish things were different. But the truth of the matter is people become comfortable with what they know. And change, even if people know that the change is fundamentally a good thing, they're comfortable with the way things are. So it takes a lot of energy to get people on board with change. It is not easy. It takes some real special skills. It takes a special caliber leadership team. And it takes a process by which you win people over and and you bring them into the future.
You know, at the same time, though, we can see, even here in our own community, how impatient people have become. Our dependence on high-speed internet, being able to choose from 100 different television shows, to buying and selling stocks, something I know that you worked change through, and airline tickets with the click of a mouse. I mean, what the result here has been almost a rudeness that I've never seen before. I mean, sitting at a traffic light today, people can't even wait their turn to get through a traffic signal without having to honk at the person in front of them. So, I mean, when we look at what technology has done for us, at the same time, it's created, I don't know, like I say, this impatience in us as well. So I'm not sure change sometime is good.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, and there is a huge amount of legitimacy about what you're saying. And our personal behaviors, how we behave toward each other. How many times have you walked into a restaurant and you see a couple, and instead of talking to each other, they're both checking their phone? In the old days, we would have been talking to each other, and now people sit there and they're checking their email, or they're looking at Facebook, or whatever the heck they're doing on their phone. And that's not about the evils of technology. That's about our all learning new ways to blend our personal humanity with the benefits of technology. And I've got to tell you, it's only going to get bigger and faster, and I think better. Others may not, but I'm on the board of Intel. I see the technology that's in our pipeline that's going to be coming out, where we're going with data centers, where we're going with artificial intelligence, where we're going with, if not self-driving cars in the next 10 years, we're going to have cars that do a lot of the driving, if not all of the driving. And when we're on the highway, most of us will not be driving our cars anymore. And that's going to be within 5 years.
And so people driving to go do what? I mean, we hear about this now. You know, now we don't need Uber drivers. Now we've got robots doing most of the manufacturing for us. So, I mean, where are people going to go and do what?
Well, I think the jobs are going to change. Jobs, manufacturing jobs are evolving. There's no question about that. But there's going to be more jobs in the service sector. Teaching, for example, will always be a human activity, as far as I can see. And we need more educators. We need more people to help our community build skills in new areas. We need to retrain people. We need to change the way we educate. We educate. The schools teach the same stuff now that they taught 25 years ago, when they should be teaching new skills and talents that are appropriate for a high-tech world.
All right. Well, what do you hope folks' takeaway will be from the 2 hours on Monday evening?
Well, I hope people have the ability to look into themselves, think about what it takes to be a leader, and think about what they're going to do to help their organizations, either as leaders or better followers. I really believe that part of organizational success is having good leaders, but also having good followers. And I hope that, we're all part of some kind of an organization. You're part of a radio station. I'm part of a wealth management firm. I'm also part of nonprofit organizations. And if people can come away with some new ideas about how to contribute to make their organizations better, and an inspiration to want to do that, to want to contribute to a better future, then I think we'll have had a very successful evening.
All right. Sounds like an interesting conversation. Again, David Pontrak, thanks for your time this morning. He'll be the guest at this year's annual Community Leadership Lecture, happening from 7 to 9 p.m. Monday, March 20th at the Jim Santee Auditorium. We'll see you then. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Leslie. Take care.
KPCW News Time, 8:26. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've reported, the Salt Lake County Council last night voting down the proposed $3 million payment to help Park City purchase Bonanza Flat. In the studio to discuss that, as well as some of the other items on tomorrow's agenda, I have City Manager Diane Foster, along with Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, we are now at least $3 million down from what we thought we would be. Now what?
Yeah, it is. You know, we're really appreciative to Mayor Ben McAdams. He did a lot of work on this. Mayor Jack Thomas and Councilmember Andy Berman put a lot of work into this, as did Wendy Fisher, and significant conversations with a lot of folks. And in fact, some of the people who voted against it actually yesterday at the session talked about how they mountain bike on that area. And so we're pretty sad about that. The way forward, you know, we're only $3 million away considering where we started. It's pretty amazing. And I'd encourage folks, you know, the first thing I did this morning was I got up and made a donation. And I think we need everyone's help on this. We're $3 million away. I think the city council will still be encouraged, right? We've gotten a long way, and we do have another, we have until June to make it there. So I really would encourage everybody, savebonanzaflats.org. Is a website you can go to and make a donation. I believe that goes to Utah Open Lands.
Yeah. So did the council know how much money the property owner wanted for this land before you asked residents to bond for $25 million?
We had a pretty good idea. You know, the city's been really clear all along that we were in a bidding war. We were going to end up paying market rate for this, right? It had a prior entitlement on it from Wasatch County, and it was pretty significant development. So, and we know for certain that Discovery Land Inc., the company who builds things for the 1% of the 1%. In fact, we heard at one point they weren't even worried about roads because they were just going to helicopter people in. Now, they obviously needed access, and that was, as I understand it, possibly one of the reasons why they stepped away. But and actually, I don't know if they stepped away or if we just Rita's company looked at it like a bird in the hand, versus, and that the city, because of the commitment of the taxpayers for $25 million, they thought we could get there.
Yeah, but I'm guessing, I mean, given that you may have known that you were going to have to pay more, I mean, do I feel a bait and switch here coming on? I mean, should we have asked for more than $25 million, or we only asked for $25 million thinking that that's all the community would step up with?
It's a really good question. I think we knew it was going to be, and actually we talked about in August, the city council talked about that it was probably more than $25 million. We didn't know exactly. We didn't know the exact price. We actually didn't know. So it was, we knew it was going to be in that area. Did we think it was 38? Probably not at that time. We probably thought it was a little bit less. But again, it's market rate for the property.
All right. So, I mean, you think we can do this with fundraising? Because I've asked Jack Thomas, Mayor Jack Thomas, several times, you know, do we have a plan B? And he tells me, no, we don't need one.
Well, I think what you were hearing from the mayor and the city council is commitment. Right. They are so committed to this property. And as staff, we're doing everything we can to support that. So the given how far we've made it with our partners, you know, we're still hopeful for Salt Lake Public Utilities. Now, we don't think they're going to be able to make up that $3 million or $3.5 million that we need. However, we think they can help us get there. And we're really going to be, you know, talking to all of our partners, public sector, private sector, et cetera. And we really appreciate all the support we've received to date because it's been amazing. I mean, if you had asked me a few months ago if I thought we'd be where we are in mid-March, it's amazing.
Yeah. Still, we've got $5.75 million pledged from Summit County, and nobody will talk about that. So we don't even know if that's a for sure thing.
That's I can tell you that we're in very good shape on that, as you heard yesterday from County Manager Tom Fisher. What we're doing right now as staff, he mentioned that we're moving paper back and forth. Basically, what we're doing is we're writing the contract. As you heard, County Council Member Chris Robinson say when they announced it, it's a combination of land and cash, and we're just the devil's in the details, and we are working on those red lines. And you know, I think within the next couple of weeks, we'll be putting something in front of the councils.
For tomorrow's meeting, council is scheduled to authorize a resolution to issue $25 million in bonds. So is that still the recommendation given last night's vote?
That is absolutely still the recommendation. And it's important to note that in the staff report that the city council can pull those back, can pull back on that any time before the bonds are issued. So it's not a, even though they're authorizing that, it makes us, gets us to move forward with our bond council on the work that you do as you're preparing for to issue the bonds.
Federal Reserve today expected to increase interest rates. What does that mean then for taxpayers who are paying for this bond?
As far as for taxpayers, you know, we have yet to see our interest rates with the bond. Our ratings with the bond agencies are stunning ratings. And in fact, we just had a Fitch just every couple of years they update, they do what they call a survey. And the head of the bond rating agency for Fitch was talking to our Nate Rockwood, our capital budgets manager, and he said they're always impressed with how Park City's doing. And he asked a last question. He said, "Why the heck are your property tax rates so low?" Because as we saw with a recent report and as we discussed in the tax forum that the Project for Deeper Understanding held, we have some of the lowest tax rates in the entire nation.
Let's see. So right now we're on the line for $3 million plus probably another $100,000, $150,000 to issue the bonds. Where's that money going to come from?
I believe they roll that into the bond.
Okay. Let's bring Hannah into the discussion. The council scheduled to talk about the land management code changes, specifically the storefront enhancement. Staff is asking council to approve these amendments that would limit storefront property, the facade, to 50 feet on both Main Street and Sweet Alley. Why the 50-foot recommendation?
The 50-foot recommendation came from a linear feet analysis that staff did on Main Street. And the goal is to maintain that traditional rhythm and scale of the historic district. And so what we see traditionally is 25 to 50 feet facades.
Yeah. So do we have any examples of something larger than 50 that we don't like? Is that why we're doing this?
It's not necessarily reactive. We're trying to be proactive in addressing this linear feet for the storefronts. And so it's not that we actually have less than 10% of our non-historic building have storefronts that are wider than 50 feet.
All right. So I guess why are we doing that if it's not a problem? Why?
It's not that it's not a problem. Like I said, we're trying to be proactive. And so the concern is that with potential development, we're going to have interest in expanding these facades on the streetscape. And so we want to make that a positive pedestrian experience and also, again, maintain that traditional rhythm and scale.
So what else would these changes do?
It's going to be limiting that storefront width. Planning Commission did want to add that every storefront should have an entrance door. So the goal is to maintain that pedestrian experience.
Okay. Diane, back to you. At 4:30 in work session, we'll be talking about the affordable housing on Lower Park Avenue. Staff is asking council if they're supportive of the timeline. I mean, where are we at with the timeline?
The timeline for phase one, this is where, you heard Council Member Tim Henney last week say we are absolutely in implementation phase on all the critical priorities as well as a number of other things the city's doing. With regard to affordable housing, 1450, 1460 is well underway. And on Woodside Park, City Council said go and go fast. So the construction schedule for this is as soon as this spring, we'll be seeing some movement happen over there. We've already given notice to the folks who are in the both our internal staff as well as Mountain Trails is in the fire station, and we're going to be taking that down. So we're going to begin work this summer. And Woodside Park, which is 8 units with 5 accessory units, is planned to be done in the spring of 2018. So this time next year, they'll be finishing that up, and we'll be going through the process to move some folks in there.
Staff report mentions in the report that they learned that the 4 single-family homes, I'm guessing this is at Woodside Park, are perhaps not, would not lend themselves toward being prefabricated homes? What does that matter?
Yeah, so what staff is very, we want to be a good neighbor and we want to minimize impacts on the neighborhood. So one of the things, and City Council member Nan Worrell had, in her neighborhood, there was a modular home going in, and, you know, modular doesn't mean what it used to mean. And so one of the benefits of modular is that they go in really quickly. So they're prefabricated in a factory, and then you ship them up and put them together. Now, it still requires a bunch of work, and it will have some impacts on the neighborhood. And staff had looked at modular. They're also looking at structurally insulated panels, which is also a little bit quicker construction technique, as well as traditional stick frame. And in addition to construction impacts, we're also always looking at cost. And the third element is that City Council wants these as close to net zero as we possibly can get. And with structurally insulated panels, you get a really terrific building envelope, which, as Mayor Jack Thomas will tell you, and I even heard him talking about this yesterday, you have to start with the insulation. And if you don't do that well, then don't bother doing other stuff.
So that's why we're not doing the prefab?
Well,
because they don't have enough insulation?
We're actually, this proposal suggests, is asking, and we're asking City Council later in the same meeting, for an increase of $41,000 to the contract. Because what we'd like to do is add $16,000 to design this for modular, and then also design it for SIPs. So do basically three designs. And while on a project this size, it might not make terrific sense, where we're going to be building 800 units, or that's the goal. Hopefully we won't have to build all of them ourselves. It really gives us a good, it's a good time to look at that and say, what is the best construction method for us to use?
All right. Continuing from last week, the council will continue the Sundance Film Festival debrief. They ran out of time last year. And we certainly know about the challenges, the snow, the Women's March. But what needs to change for next year? I mean, we're going to get snow again.
We absolutely are. I think the biggest thing we heard from City Council last week, and as you mentioned, you know, there we ran out of time, basically. We spent about 45 minutes on it, and we've added an hour this week. And I think the biggest thing you're going to see from City Council is a discussion about traffic mitigation and whether or not, you know, in some of the events we do in town, such as the Arts Fest, we limit access to residential streets. And so I think that may be the biggest thing you see City Council ask us to do. Transportation Planning Manager Alfred Knotts is very involved in that process. And so I think we'll be looking, probably that'll be the biggest change.
Yeah. So talking about using those residential permits like we do see with Arts Festival.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what about just saying no then to vehicles? I mean, we did it for the Olympics. We had a lot more people then.
I think that's a very good question. You know, we try to do things incrementally and try to look at how do we mitigate. So my guess is before we did an all-out ban on vehicles, because that'll also impact residents, I think we would look first at limiting them on residential streets.
All right. What about the festival submitted an exhibit detailing their expenses for parking, traffic, communications to the tune of some $260,000? Is Sundance asking for help with this or asking for fee reductions? Or
No, there are some fee reductions included in the contract. I think the point of that is that we very much share costs. So Sundance brings in a significant number of additional buses. You know, one of our great experiences was that Sundance ran a bus to the park and ride this year for the first 4 days of the festival. Everyone said that was a resounding success, and let's do that again. And I think that's an example of we try to do things incrementally so that we don't have unintended consequences.
Yeah. And I guess the city also saw reduced liquor licenses and convention sales licenses. Does this mean less money for the city? And the concern, I think, was because there were increased rents on Main Street.
There were. And we're actually not concerned about the money on this. This is a tool that we use to try to bring what Sundance calls ambushers. They're the non-sponsorship organizations that are here, and they're only here because of Sundance. You know, you don't see them other times of the year. And we want to, in years past, that activity really went into the neighborhoods, and that's not good for residents. So we tried to bring that back to Main Street. So it's one of those things to highlight for council as we're keeping an eye on that. It's important to note, though, that staff did make a change. Some of that reduction is because staff made a change this year and said, hey, look, if you're having a private party in a restaurant and the restaurant already serves alcohol, then we're not going to require you to get a separate permit for that as we have in the past.
All right. And then late applications, also a perennial problem. We can just say no, right?
There are certain things we can say no to and certain things we can. It really depends on are we affecting life safety or not. And so it is an ongoing discussion, and yeah, stay tuned.
All right. And finally, just wanted to mention this, that COSAC and also Recreation Advisory Board recommending that the council grant a third-party preservation easement on Library Field. We're going to move forward with this and protect that open space forever?
I think that's an open question, and that's a question for City Council. We do have a recommendation from COSAC and RAB to put an easement on this. And one of the things you'll see from staff in the report is just to make sure that if some type of preservation easement is put on this. Staff hasn't provided a recommendation either way. However, we do have a strong recommendation. If it's a preservation easement, we don't want it to be a traditional open space easement, because we think that actually devalues some of the open space easements we have, because there aren't really wildlife or conservation. I mean, yes, it's wild over there, but not in the same kind of terms as deer and elk on the property. So we would very much want City Council to specify and ask staff to come back with proposed, what type of easement could we put on this if they wanted that.
I guess I just also wanted to note that City Council will be asked to adopt the resolution supporting the Mountain Recreational Facilities Master Plan. This is the joint plan between Park City, Snyderville Basin Rec District, and Park City School District. So is this important that this get done now as the school district contemplates holding a bond election November?
I think it's helpful towards that. I don't think it's as important as it was last time, because the school district has built in a lot of their needs into their facilities plan, and they've been very open with the public about that. This is really to say City Council thinks we're on the right track. This doesn't oblige any of the organizations to a specific path forward. It's really a resolution to say, okay, we're going to start working now on how do we implement this and pay for it.
All right. Diane Foster, Hannah Tyler, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
8:45 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as you walk or drive by, you can see the building going up at the Park City Christian Center. In the studio with an update of that, as well as news about their upcoming Easter Basket program, I have Program Director Pete Sauten, along with Executive Director Rob Harder. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, sure. So first, let's talk about the Easter Basket program. Easter, April 16th this year. What have you guys got planned?
That's right. The week of Easter, we'll be handing out to our pantry guests Easter baskets that have been contributed by our community. And we'll include, the typical small gifts and coloring book and crayons and school supplies and some candy, obviously, for our pantry guests.
Okay, so what are you asking for? People to contribute to making those baskets happen? Or
yes. What we'd love to see is 350 Easter baskets at the Christian Center. And we'd love for – one way we're encouraging folks is like what my wife is doing. She's grabbing a bunch of my daughter's friends, and they're going to do a little girls' get-together and build 10, 15 Easter baskets for the Christian Center.
All right, so you're asking people to show up with – filled Easter baskets,
yes,
and drop
fully
those
assembled.
Off.
Yep. Yep. Fully assembled.
Which is different than most years, so that is different this year.
That is correct. Yeah. And then we've also partnered with another nonprofit, Pajamas program, and we'll actually be handing out full pajamas and books to the kids also. So they'll get an Easter basket constructed by our community and pajamas and a book.
All right. Do they need to let you know that they're doing this?
It would be great if they did, but surprises are always great. I mean, it's Easter, so... It's a surprise.
Okay. Those baskets have to be delivered by when?
By April 7th.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. And also, we mentioned the construction project that is ongoing. It looks like a three-story building there, Rob. Is that
It sure is. Yep. We're going to basically double the square footage for our building by having another building just north of us, which is three floors, which is nice. And we're going to grade the back area so it's no longer kind of a basement level. It's actually a first level if you go around the back. And then, but yes, it's going to be three levels. It's going to give us a lot of space.
Yeah. So what are you doing in that building?
Yeah. So some highlights. No, the first level is going to be our expanded food pantry and learning kitchen. We're actually going to have a much more of a self-serve process where you can come through with a shopping cart, almost like a, not quite a grocery store, a little bit more like a 7-Eleven experience, but you can actually do a self-serve approach at the food pantry, plus a little learning kitchen in the corner. So that'll be in the main level. The second level is going to be our staff. We've grown. We have 36 staff now at the Christian Center. Most people have no idea that we have that many staff. So that's going to be a staff area plus our program area to, you know, for staging area for all the different programs we have, like the Easter baskets. And then the third level, we're going to dedicate completely to the counseling center. We have six professionally trained counselors now on staff, from a PsyD, you know, a doctorate, all the way to someone who works with teens and substance abuse issues. And we anticipate over the next couple of years, we'll probably double. The need for mental health issues here is really large. I know you've had a lot of, like, the Connect group on here and the Summit County Health focus on mental health issues. And so that's a big piece of what we do. So the whole third level is going to provide for that.
Mm-hmm. Is that done on a subsidized basis, the counseling?
We do. That's right. You can do full pay. You can do insurance. And then we have a scholarship fund. So like the People's Health Clinic, if you can't afford the entire client session, we'll help offset that cost so you can still get the counseling you need.
All right. So since you're taking some of the uses out of the existing building, what's going to go where those uses were?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So the lower level is now going to be our storage area. We've had offsite storage for years now, and it's going to finally come back in. So all the things that you donate, thanks to the wonderful, generous community, that's going to go into our lower level, and we'll have a nice, organized space down there. But that's where we're going to be storage. The first level is going to be our new extended boutique. And then right next to that is our thrift store. So both of those will be expanded because we're going to actually, once the new building's done, we'll switch all of the operations over and then remodel the current building. And so like the porch area, for example, that comes out to Deer Valley Drive, that'll be all glassed in, and so you have a lot more room for the boutique. And then finally, the top level we're really excited about, that's an expanded special events center. So we'll do Sundance events, we'll do community events. We've hosted everything from city council to churches in there to a whole variety of different events, and we'd like to expand that. And it's actually going to be another, probably a third more space, and it's going to be hopefully a really nice premier spot to have your events. That not quite a big like hotel setting. It's that in between, which there's not many places in Park City like that where you can host an event that's not super expensive, you know, in terms of to rent. So we're hoping to provide that for the community.
Yeah. How many people do you think that?
We feel like you can get comfortably 200 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is that where you would do your Tuesday night dinners then? Or?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So Tuesday night dinners would go right in there. We want to give a shout out to the Park City Library. They've been so gracious about hosting it this year. And what's that?
They've been fantastic.
They've been great. They really have.
Right.
So, but yes, we'll hopefully be able to come right back to our current spot next year.
All right. So what's the timeline on all this construction?
Yeah. So the timeline is this. We'd love to be in our new building by August of this year. And then that we'll go into remodel the current building. And we're hoping to get in there by March 2018.
Wow. Okay. And the cost to do all of this?
Yeah. Total cost is $7.3 million. So it's a big chunk of change. And the exciting thing is we like to publicly launch. You know, we've reached 60%. We didn't do any construction until we hit that 60% mark. But now we've now launched publicly. So as you're listening, we'd love to get the support of the community. We want to finish out. Now it's kind of like 38% left to go. We'd like to the community really rally around to say, let's help finish this so that we can get this done and expand our programs, expand our services.
Well, you make it look easy.
Thank you. Well, we didn't want to put all that on the community and say, okay, help us raise 7.3. We wanted to come and do the private phase and get you know, some funding up front.
Okay. And then, Pete, you were telling me that you do have a spring sale going on at the offsite boutique?
Yeah, at our offsite. So one way you can help support the Christian Center is come on April 6th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Shop, sip some wine, and see our spring sales. We'll be rolling out all of our spring attire at the boutique, and people can support the Christian Center in that way.
Okay, and that's located where?
That's the location right on Iron Horse, near Ritual Chocolate and Mercer Automotive.
Okay, mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, just thanks for having us on the show, and we hope that you can check all the information at ccfpc.org.
Okay, Rob, Pete, thanks for coming in.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
8:55, good morning. Well, Ballet West returns to the Eccles Center this Saturday night. On the phone to tell us what to expect is Ballet West Artistic Director Adam Skluk. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. The performance begins at 7:30. Ballet West will be performing 4 world premiere ballets. So tell us about them a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really excited. These world premiere ballets are part of our Works From Within program, ballets created by our Ballet West artists. And I have to say, they really span the gamut in terms of creativity and art. I mean, what an amazing collaboration some of these dancers are doing with jazz dance, hip-hop dance, classical music, contemporary music of all kinds. I mean, my gosh, we even have dancers popping to Philip Glass music. It's amazing to see these classically trained dancers working in all different styles. The program is concise. It's 4 world premieres, all done in about 90 minutes, so it's a perfect time frame for a Saturday evening. And I'm really, really excited that Ballet West is returning to Park City, as we don't get a chance to come up as often as we would like.
So are these all solo performances or no?
No. The entire company is coming, and each one of those works range in size of cast, but some of them are big cast, some of them are small cast. The Park City audiences will get a chance to see our entire company.
Okay, so including the Ballet West principals?
Yes, including the Ballet West principals. So, yeah, pretty much 40 people will be involved in the program, so our leading dancers to our newer dancers, and the entire organization.
Great.
It's really, I really love this program. And again, I love it because I love being able to create and present new works, to see these experiments, to see where the art form of ballet is going as we move it forward.
So as you call it Works From Within, does it mean that the individual dancers have choreographed this themselves? Or
exactly. That's exactly what it means. Every year, I ask my dancers to apply with a written application of what they want to do. Then they workshop those works for a little while, and I select those. This year, I got 8 written applications. I selected 6 of them to workshop, and then I narrowed it down to 4 that I wanted to create full, complete works. Those works will go on to perform at our National Choreographic Festival, on tour when we tour around the country and around the world. It's really a great opportunity for them to develop their artistry and their creativity, and also for audiences to really see and be a part of the creative process and understand what's so vital about the future of ballet.
Okay. Just another minute here. What have you got on tap then for the rest of your company's performances at the Capitol Theater?
Yeah, so we finish up with Works From Within, and as I said, we're thrilled to be coming back to Park City again. And after that, opening April 7th, we have our Journeys and Reflections program, a brilliant triple bill of works from classical and neoclassical works, George Balanchine, a new creation by Utah native Garrett Smith, who's been making a great name for himself internationally, and the great anti-war statement, The Green Table, from 1932, one of the greatest ballets ever created. Then later in the spring, late May, we have the International Choreographic Festival. This is a choreographic festival where we're bringing in companies from around the world, and we have 4 companies, American companies, this year joining us, and we'll be premiering that at the new Echoes Theater down here in Salt Lake City. So it's an exciting end to the season, and we're really glad to be kicking off our spring with a return to Park City.
Okay. Look forward to seeing you Saturday night. Again, tickets start at $29. Student tickets are available. For more information, echoescenter.org. Adam, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.